From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Voters to the city, fix those potholes. That's what I say every single morning at 3 a.m. I poke my head out of my window from my very expensive apartment.
Yeah.
I just start screaming, potholes! Do that for minimum 15 minutes.
Okay.
Bring my head back in. Don't say another word for the rest of the night. My little ritual that I have. Speaking of, by the way, a man who claims he wants to build a cabin in mine for gold at a Seattle park was arrested again. This guy, for the third time, he's gone up in them there hills because there's gold up there, and he starts a mining, and then he gets arrested.
Yeah.
Before we get to all of that, drought, right? Bad news bears. Drought, Spike, despite the fact that it rains literally all the time.
Yeah.
Drought, what are we to do? I don't think we'll ever recover from this. Aaron? What's the story about this drought? Can you fill us in on this really quick? What's
Ecology Department issuing pretty much a statewide drought declaration for like 99% of the state, essentially.
We're all going to die.
We're not going to
die.
We're
going to die. Our lawns are going to die.
That's not what they're saying. Snowpack is just, it's like the lowest it's been in a decade.
Where's the 1% who's hoarding all the water?
Well, of course there's. I mean, what, who?
No, I shouldn't say 99%, but the big cities should be okay. And I assume that they're going to figure out ways to resolve this issue. They freed up, I want to say it was like $4.5 million. This is what this declaration does to help cities that are in need, to help them recover from this. But cities like Tacoma, Seattle, Everett, what the Ecology Department is saying is that they have these better reservoir systems in place, better water management strategies in place, so we should be fine. But it's going to be a dry summer.
Which means it's going to be a fire summer and a smoke summer.
And a dry, yeah.
Cruel summer.
Which means that we're all going to die. Cruel summer. Inside. Taylor Swift. Yeah. I heard that record the other day. Thank you, Mr. Granillo.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your input. We're all going to die because we're all going to burn to death. Laura said it. Spike said it. It's been confirmed here that's going to be the case.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. That's what I'm
looking for an AstroTurf endorsement for my yard.
I am in no way, shape, or form being a reactionary when I say that this is going to be the worst season of all time.
Oh, come 99%
on. Drought. Does that make me a reactionary? I don't know. I work in media. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for that, Andrew. I have been having a bit of a heart condition recently, so rapid scares always make sure that I know that it's still working. You know what I mean?
Just tie just a quick little bow on
for
you, Jack.
Sure. Yeah.
This is from Ecology, a quote here in Washington. Drought is declared when there is less than 75% of normal water supply, and there is the risk of undue hardship. That's when a drought is declared.
Okay, so it's like a warning shot, basically.
Yeah.
Say, hey, everybody, don't leave the sprinkler on overnight.
Well,
water smart.
Thank you for that, Aaron, because I'm now much less of a reactionary, and I can calm down, because now we have data, and that's why that's so important. So where do you want to start here? Spike, potholes? I think that might be a good place to start.
I think if a guy got in a truck full of asphalt and drove around town and called himself Pothole Pete and fixed potholes for people and ran for mayor, he'd win in a landslide.
Wow.
Potholes are an indicator species of what's wrong with the city.
Okay.
That's what people deal with on a daily basis, on a constant basis. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, where's my tax dollars going? Every road in town is absolute garbage. Yada, yada, yada. If somebody's out there doing the things that are like the talk about your kitchen table type issues, if you had potholes as your number one thing, I bet you'd win an election in this town.
I have a crazy piece of advice for people. It's something that I've been using ever since I wrecked my last car. You don't drive, and you have other people drive you, and then you never experience potholes. I don't remember the last time I went over a pothole. Couldn't tell you.
Really?
Couldn't tell you. Don't remember it. You guys deal with it on a daily basis because you're suckers for big automobile. Look at me. I'm living the free life, baby.
I'm replacing a lower fairing on my wife's car because we took a pothole. And it was so deep that it literally destroyed the undercarriage of my wife's front bumper.
Wow.
You know,
One in four Seattle voters surveyed listed affordability as their top concern per the report. But the other concern here was potholes, right? So talk about, what are we going to do with all these potholes?
Where do I live and potholes?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's too expensive to live here. There's too many potholes. I get that it's an issue. I get it's an issue that people can vote on. Thank you so much, Axios, for that lovely story. Right? I mean, it's just like, I feel like we are so pampered as Americans.
Yep.
And 99.9999999% of all roadways in Seattle, King County, in Washington are, you know, drivable. And yet we go over a pothole once a day and we go, God, the city's falling apart. Oh my God. And it's like, please.
I hear you, man.
I watched a documentary. It's a beautiful documentary. It's about three boys, Indian boys, and they are living in a rural county somewhere in India. Two of them can walk. One of them is in a wheelchair. The wheelchair is constructed out of bicycle parts and is pushed along by bicycle wheels, and it is defunct. It cannot be pushed anymore. Yeah. So his two brothers have to pick it up and carry it on paved roads. Oh, I'm just kidding. On dirt,
yeah.
Surrounded by wild animals and freight trucks going by. And so they pick him up and they bring him over to a bike repair shop. Not a wheelchair repairs.
No, bike repairs.
A bike repair shop where they don't have enough rupees to pay for his wheelchair to be repaired. So they offer to do work in his bike repair shop to make enough rupees so that their disabled little brother can get new wheels for his wheelchair, which, by the way, is half sections of two separate bikes. The colors don't match. Yeah. And then the seat that's put on it is an office chair. And we all, and they do it, and it's beautiful. It's
sure.
a gorgeous documentary.
Make it work, whatever you have.
Beautiful documentary. Yeah. And then we go, oh my, oh, I can't believe I'm being so disposed to a bumpy ride in my Cadillac Escalade. Whatever shall I do with this bumpy ride as I'm going along down South Lake Union? Is that Jeffrey Bezos I see down on his yacht?
Don't these potholes suck, Jeffrey?
Jeffrey, I do believe this is the first time I've run into a pothole ever since I started taking the helicopter around South Lake Union. Thank you, Jeffrey. Lovely to see you, by the way. How's the collagen? I mean, your wife.
Thank you, by the way, for that perspective. You're right. You're totally right.
I know. Thank you. I appreciate
that.
Man,
we are so privileged in this country, in this first world. I forget sometimes.
I know, right? Well, otherwise you have to be worldly and miserable like me, right?
Yeah.
Do you know that this is one of the reasons why Hitler, coincidentally, being that I've read so much about the Nazis recently, that's why he hated bohemianism or internationalism?
Why?
Because the sufferings of the world were not the sufferings of the German people.
No kidding.
And so he thought that this idea of having an international mindset was introducing a kind of international perspective that was distracting Germans from their true nature, which was to be in service to the fatherland.
The country.
Okay. Isn't that an amazing perspective?
That is.
Right.
I thought you were going to say he was just filling potholes.
Or
he was the power.
That's what he did.
Yeah, well,
Hitler just went around, you know, filling potholes.
Got a shovel.
That's what he did, right? So the man who claims that he wants to build a cabin and mine for gold at a Seattle park was arrested again for gold mining. Steve Irwin, unfortunate name, right? It is an unfortunate name to have because there's the Steve Irwin.
Yeah. You think that's why he's so troubled is because he'll never be the Steve Irwin?
I suppose if it was like if your name was like, I don't know, David Bowie, you might have a hard time navigating life.
So do you play? No, I don't play anything. Sorry. You do art? What do you do?
Nothing really.
Do you sing at all? No. Did you have like a cool nickname in high school? Was it like Ziggy Stardust? No.
I worked at the Fulfillment Center.
It's just Dave. Dave is what they called me. So
he
again, you know, tried to do this whole thing when he came to Seattle from Mississippi several years ago. You know, he is just a deeply unwell man. And his mom actually reached out to Como News and she said he won't let us help him. He won't get this is clearly someone who needs locked care. He needs a place where he can get the drugs out of his system, according to his mom, and also become medicated. This just kind of highlights the epic rant that I went on yesterday on this show, being that we have misdiagnosed the homeless problem. So 100%.
Clearly.
People say it's drugs. It's not drugs. It's mental illness.
Right.
And I think that if we reframe it in that way, we can then actually get services for people like Steve Irwin, who desperately needs some kind of, you know, attention paid to him.
Right. And how many times is this guy going to be arrested before we realize what the real problem is? Is this guy's mental health.
Right. And, you know, Sam Campbell did a piece recently on We Heart Seattle that caused a bit of a ruckus. It caused a lot of backlash against it. People were saying, why are you criticizing? Why would you ever want to criticize Andrea Suarez and the fine people over at We Heart Seattle? Picked up over 1 million pounds of garbage, right? Mm. This is my conversation that I had with John Curley. He said, why would you ever want to criticize good old-fashioned We Heart Seattle? Doesn't make any sense. And my thought about it was basically like this. you know, because Andrea Suarez is mentioned in the article, and she says there's probably about 2,000 pounds of trash. And she goes on to say it's inhumane for Steve to continue to come out here into the woods because he has untreated mental illness. That is the message here. We keep letting him come back, and this is the third time. I hope he can get discharged and go somewhere we can get psychiatric treatment. So one of the things that I think Sam tried to highlight in that piece is that the reason that this continues to happen is the same reason that Andrea Suarez is pointing out, but for some reason she's blinded to the fact that she might indeed be inadvertently contributing to the problem. That when you do outreach in this way, there is a system by which this works. I know this because I was married to a clinician who did outreach in homeless encampments.
Right.
On average, it takes about 6 interactions before you can get that person to even agree to take something as simple as a bottle of water from you. So when you go into these campsites, you start cleaning up garbage. If these campsites are even remotely in some way, shape, or form inhabited, you're going to get people who are on the defensive. Are you certified? Are you not certified? Can you give me services? Are you going to lie to me about services that I can get? These are all issues that we should talk about when it comes to non-governmental organizations or nonprofits, because if you don't have that level of understanding of the mechanisms of talking to someone who's off of their schizophrenia meds, are you actually doing a service, or are you just cleaning up the aesthetics of a green belt because you don't like the trash? It's a worthwhile endeavor. But are you not also inadvertently harming people by not knowing how to talk to Steve Irwin and explain to him, Steve, there's no gold in these hills.
Right. If you had the accreditation and the knowledge of what he needs, then maybe he wouldn't be back out here again, getting rearrested again because he's back in another camping.
You want to? Let me give you a crazy meta analysis of this. You guys want to go real deep into psychological theory?
Always.
Why is Steve digging for gold? We might ask that. Why has he created the imagery in his mind that there are diamonds and gold in various Seattle green belts, and he needs to steal construction equipment to get into that? As a schizophrenic man, why does he think this?
Is he trying to solve the problem of not being able to take care of himself?
Dang, Spike O'Neill, perfect.
Thank you.
Externalizing internal dilemma is a key feature of schizophrenia. Maybe if Andrea Suarez, you know, read a book, she might know that that's why.
That's why Steve stole an excavator.
Right. Yeah. And I appreciate Andrea, by the way. I'm not trying to come down on her. What I'm trying to say is that the reason that mentally ill people do certain things is because they are externalizing an internal battle or inconsistency. He cannot provide for himself. Thus, he attempts to dig gold so he can find riches and thus take care of himself. You might also say that he is that repetitive digging motion is the turmoil inside of his mind that he is now representing externally into terra firma. But of course, we don't talk about that kind of stuff anymore because we got to talk about naming apples, baby. Who wants to name the new apple over at WSU? Boo psychology, boo trying to understand the complex internal universe of human beings. What are we going to call that sweet apple that's not coming out for 4 years? I'm calling it the Jack Stein is what I'm calling it.
It's sweet and sour at the same time, yeah.
I don't mean to be condescending about it. I just mean
if we actually had the tools to solve the problem, we wouldn't have to keep reliving the problem.
Right, exactly. Downtown Seattle's Bed Bath & Beyond building is going to become an art center. Now, I was under the impression that Bed Bath & Beyond was already a museum. It was a dedication to white women. And so you would walk into a Bed Bath & Beyond, and you would be in the natural habitat of the white woman. And as you walked around, you would see the scents and the nesting rituals of said white woman.
Yeah, that's exactly
You would get the pheromones. You would hear the mating call. Where's my purse? Where's my purse? Where are my kids? Right? You would hear the
Bed Bath Beyond Shoppers.
Right. As an anthropologist walking into Bed Bath and Beyond, my observation was that this is a dangerous place to be. Tight corners, not good sight lines, tripping over baskets of towels and whatnot. This is a disaster. Laura, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I always think of that Broad City bit where Abby has the secret handshakes with all of the employees.
Yeah.
And also, you can never reach anything. I never understood why the shelves go all the way to the warehouse ceiling.
Yeah. I will say that one of my biggest mistakes that I ever made in my life was I went to a store that was like a Bed Bath & Beyond with a group of women. And I had not seen this level of anthropologic interaction before.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot of smell this thing, touch this thing.
Feel this.
Look at this.
Isn't this great?
Isn't this great?
Is this the most wonderful toilet brush you've ever seen?
Right, exactly. So I'm walking around in this almost this fugue state. And then I realized that 6 days had gone by and we were still walking around in this in this store, and they were all acting as if we'd only been there for 10 minutes. They were all, touch this thing, smell this thing, look at this thing.
Do you know why that's why IKEA sells meatballs? Because the same thing happens at IKEA. You've been there for weeks. If they don't feed the people, they'll pass out in the beds.
Exactly.
I got to tell you, man, when I saw that, and this is, I'm torn about this. Because, you know, I'm raising artists. I'm raising a second artist in my family. So when they say they're going to make it an art center with fashion shows and art displays and working artists, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But when you've got space downtown, massive space downtown, and you don't turn it into a triage center for the homeless, when we take this retail downtown a block or two away from Westlake Center, right? All the this is about and the intent of the art center is to bring people back into downtown. Right? Why aren't people going downtown in the first place? Because they don't feel safe down there. There's too much of the people living on the streets down there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could have, we keep talking about how we take these empty spaces. Let's make them someplace that can help solve the biggest problem our city faces right now, which is crime and homelessness.
God, that is so base, Spike. Wow.
And the name, Bed Bath & Beyond, is all. It's perfect for treating the homeless. Have a bed. Have a bath. Let's find out what's beyond for you.
Spike, you got to cool that brain down of yours. You're about to literally explode with intelligence right now. That is unbelievable. This is your galaxy brain right now. I am a mere mortal in the presence of an intellectual titan right now. Bed Bath & Beyond is literally the perfect name for triaging homeless people.
Right? And it how is, many empty Bed Bath & Beyonds are around town?
Dozens.
Everywhere.
Hundreds.
Across
let
the
alone
country.
The nation.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I just wish we'd have thought of this before they emptied all the beds, baths, and towels out of it, because we could have used those.
We could have used those. Dang it! We should have thought of this in advance. Andrew, I'm holding you accountable for this oversight.
Totally understandable.
Thank you, my friend. That's why I always come to you with my blame, because you never make any excuses whatsoever, and you are always conciliatory and erudite in your assessment of your own failures as my personal assistant and as my good friend. Hot sauce.
I mean, one of the reasons this store went out of business downtown was because of the surrounding aesthetics of those that need help in our community.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a journey, and I'm sure that the more that people become aware of this and the more that people become aware of the problems that are facing downtown, the more people will vote accordingly. My evidence for this is the most recent series of elections,
there
right?
There you go. Yep,
all absolutely. The defunders gone. All yep. the, you know, let homeless people do what they want.
The
people
appeasers.
Gone. Yep. And so now you got a bunch of moderates in there, which is something to feel positive about and something to be feel very happy about. Speaking of, by the way, Mr. Jake Skorheim, attorney at law, is coming into the office.
All right.
To talk about Seattle plastic surgery provider illegally blocked bad Yelp reviews, according to a judge. You don't like those bad Yelp reviews? Too bad. You got to take it. How to leave a bad online review without being a jerk. Laura, I didn't read this, but I know how to do it. I know how to leave a bad online review.
Perfect. It's you can just, share with a group. Yeah.
It is just colon, backwards parentheses. That's it. That's all you got to put. It says everything that people need to know about how you feel about that business.
It really does.
Or when your ex-wife says, can you send me more money? Just colon. Backwards parentheses, and then she knows how you feel about sending her more money. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Plastic surgery. Sorry, I just had an apple. I got so activated by all that apple talk that we were having.
Yeah, you decided to jump.
I went right up to Nate Connors. I said, give me that. And I reached into his lunch sack and I took his apple and
sweet,
I ate it.
Sweet, tart, firm, crisp, juicy.
That's what I said right to his face as I was eating it. I said, nom, nom, sweet, tart, firm, Nate Connors. Speaking of, by the way, a plastic surgery provider illegally blocked bad Yelp reviews, according to a judge. Joining us is our very own Jake Skorheim, attorney at law from Skorheim, Skorheim, and Skorheim, soon to be Skorheim, 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 and
Skorheim. Yeah,
Skorheim.
That's right. Yeah.
Didn't go with Skorheim and Sons?
You know, that would shorten it.
That would.
Yeah,
probably
but people
on the
would
shingle.
Ask you to look but at then, their plumbing at that point, right?
Yeah, but then you don't get the alliteration of saying Skorheim multiple times in a row.
It sticks with you that way. You're right.
Jake, have you ever left a bad review on Yelp? You ever read anybody a negative review?
You know, I have actually never left a bad Yelp review. I've never taken that. I feel like if I have had a bad experience in a restaurant or something, I have already wasted my time. And so to go online then and then, I've not left a bad Yelp review. No.
I did it one time Only one time have I ever left a negative review for a business.
Did it feel good?
It was a restaurant in Santa Cruz, California. I will answer that question, though, Jake. I will get to that. There's a restaurant in Santa Cruz. I loved this restaurant. It was my favorite restaurant to go to. One of them. One of the top five.
Okay.
I used to go to on a regular basis. I'm not going to say the name of it, but used to go to it all the time. We go there. My ex-wife and I go there. Sit in one of our favorite booths right by the window overlooking the Pacific, the road that runs all the way down to the ocean.
Right.
Absolutely gorgeous. Order my food. And we're waiting. And other people are coming, and they're ordering, and they're getting served, and then they are then leaving. And then we start looking,
oh, no. Yeah.
And we realize that we had been there for an hour. And then I said to the waitress, I think maybe our orders got locked up or something. She goes, oh, let me go check on that. She then comes back. Rather than having them remake us new food, they brought us the food that had been sitting under a heat lamp for about an hour.
No.
So what we had ordered had kind of dehydrated, to put it nicely.
Congealed.
We had completely basically dried out. And so at that point, you know, you don't send food back to a kitchen. It's kind of rule number one.
Uh-uh.
So I just kind of enjoyed my surf and turf, and Sarah, in heavy quotation marks, enjoyed her shepherd's pie.
Your fish jerky. Exactly.
Yeah. And then so as we were leaving, I left. The tip was not consummate to what we ordered. I left a $5 tip for the person. And then that waitress followed me out of the restaurant and was trying to speak to me about how my tip was not enough to her standard.
Not the full 15-18% that she expected?
So being the gentleman that I was, I took out another $5 and I handed it to her.
You gave in?
Well, because I thought to myself, my self-righteousness is worth significantly less than being able to tell the story and say that I gave her $5 simply to quell her temper tantrum because I am the better person than to follow somebody out of a restaurant. Does that make sense?
It does.
So
you know, I'm always amazed. I'm always amazed when I hear stories about waitresses following out.
It's bizarre. It's an awkward feeling.
Listen, like it's a tough industry. I've been in the food service industry before. It's like it's very demanding of your time. I totally get it. But that's the job. But that somebody would literally follow somebody out, like that never ends well.
No.
The only reason a waiter or waitress to follow somebody out of the restaurant is like to give somebody their phone back.
If you left something at the booth, right.
Well, so the Yelp review that I left, I mentioned nothing about the waitress because I don't want her to lose her job.
Yeah, she didn't cook the meal.
Right, she didn't cook the meal. She was busy night that night. I'm sure that she just thought, oh, there's food at the end of the heating tray.
She's embarrassed because service is bad
because
the restaurant is slow. Yes.
Yeah, but that's completely on her. I mean, it's not like the food was bad. It's not the kitchen was backed up. She left her sitting on. She didn't manage her stations.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't manage her tables. Mm-hmm. She didn't realize that the food she had ordered was sitting in the damn hot spot.
Well,
an hour.
This is the way my brain works because I like to make big narratives. Jake, tell me if you're the same way. What I said in my mind was maybe she got a couple kids. Maybe she's having a bad night. Maybe she forgets about our meal. She's upset enough to follow me out of a restaurant.
Okay.
The idea that I say, Cheryl at this restaurant left our food under a heat lamp for an hour, and I've never had a worse time at this restaurant. Her boss then sees that and says, you're fired.
Because
she was having a bad day. It's not in my DNA.
It's not a career ender.
I agree to leave a... I would worry about an overreaction from the restaurant, too, which is why I wouldn't leave a bad review. Everybody can have a bad day, obviously. You know, I get that. I mean, we do this show every day.
We get bad reviews constantly, right? Right, Laura?
Oh, go ahead.
Do you guys ever base your decisions on... Do you use Yelp reviews when you decide where to go? If you're in a new market?
No. Oh, yes, absolutely.
What?
Yeah. Oh, I read every review before I buy anything, before I go anywhere.
This is a woman thing. This is what ladies do.
Do you really?
I really do.
Aren't you worried?
It's not a woman that... My mom doesn't.
Is a woman there, Laura. I don't know if you know.
Are you sure?
Are you worried? Are you worried, though, that you're just reading reviews by people who have an agenda or maybe... Like, I just... Because they're written by people who might be crazy.
I do filter for that. Like, you can tell if someone is just not having a good day.
Sure. And
you know,
it feels like retaliation.
Yeah.
When I was doing my marketing education, reputation management... You know, and now that reviews have become more prominent in how people make buying decisions, I mean, you know, there are companies out there that will take and get rid of the bad reviews for you. One of the companies I worked for did that. They went in and they wouldn't just like eliminate bad reviews. They'd reach out to the people who gave you a bad review, find out what went wrong. What can the company do to make it right for you? How can we win you back as a customer? That kind of thing. But reputation management, it's live or die for businesses.
I had a bad experience. My wife and I, we don't often get a chance to go out because we have three young kids. And so whenever we go out, that's prized time.
Yeah.
When you can get away from the kids, you find a sitter. Like in this case, we left them with my parents. It was, you know, we had a night out. So we go to this restaurant. I'm not going to say the name of the restaurant because it's kind of like your story. I don't want to, you know, dog the restaurant.
really horrible service. And we had heard really good things about it. It was our first experience there. The waitress just could not have been less attentive to us at the table. She kept, every once in a while, she'd like breeze by and say, oh, we're so sorry. Things are really slow in the kitchen. And then like after an hour-ish of time, she finally comes out and goes, you know what happened? And she's holding my ticket like I'm going to somehow be able to fix this problem for her. Right. She goes, you know what happened? This fell off the thing. And I was like, oh, those things, you know, like that happens all the time.
Yeah, those things.
And I'm sitting here and like, and I don't understand this either. She has my wife's food. She does not have my food. And she goes, so do you want us to, should we put the order back in? Like the other option is me just leaving hungry. And so I was like, well, you know, I did plan on eating when I came in here. So yes, I would like food.
Look, what order do they have it over there? Grab
and now
me
my
that.
Wife, now my wife is having to sit there eating by herself as I'm just like angry drinking, which is fine. Like it ended up being a fine night. But it was such a bad experience. If there was ever an experience, I could have easily gone back to the restaurant and written a bad review. What I did instead, which I think most reasonable adults do, I was very passive aggressive the rest of the night. So anytime she came and like filled up my water, I would nod. I didn't say thank you, like I didn't overly like thank her for filling mm-hmm. water, like mm-hmm. she's curing cancer or something. And then by the end of the meal, we left, and I left a moderate tip.
Okay,
I did not leave
a
huge tip. Yeah, like if I'm feeling good, it's 20%. If it's great service, it's 25%. But this was like maybe a 10%er. And I felt like I really stuck it to him, leaving him only 10%.
The trick
did she follow you to the car?
She didn't follow me, no.
The trick that I learned from my grandfather, who was a horribly abusive man to me, but was the most charismatic guy you'd ever want to meet on God's green earth. The guy could sell ice to Eskimos. You know what I mean? The guy was so charismatic. If we went into a restaurant and it was busy, the second that we sat down, he would say to the waiter or the waitress, he would say, oh, you can take your time with us. We'll be here for a while. And we would get immaculate service, timely service every single time. When they would come by, he would say, do you want to take a break? You want to sit down with us? You're so busy.
Nice.
And then they would say, you know, got the calamari here if you want to just hang out with us for a few. And that, we got the
That was
best,
the magic word.
That was the magic every single time. Now, that guy was a sociopath, but at the same time, to this day, every time I sit down in a busy restaurant, take your time. We're super busy.
We're no
rush.
We're
just going to be hanging out. Yeah. We're no rush whatsoever. You want to take a break with us? We're just going to have some waters. We're good for a while.
Yeah, you know, I kind of did that when I was a drinker. I used to go to a bar and first drink, $20. Bartender's like, what?
Yeah, all night, buddy.
He
this is how it's coming.
He looked for me all night.
Yeah, Jake Skorheim can be heard every single night, 7 to 10 p.m. on Cairo Nights. And this afternoon with Sherry Ellicker. Yes. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Spike's pet is being stalked by coyotes, as yours is as well. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Ah, yes. Coyotes are a thing this time of year. Spike, I know you're your little Ferris is being stalked by coyotes. Right?
Yeah, I made eye contact with a coyote two nights ago, I think it was.
What did he say when you made eye contact?
He just held up a sign that said kaboom. It's the weirdest thing. Well, you
got
know,
on a big Acme rocket, and he shot himself into the side of
a mountain. It was hilarious because I painted it to look like a drain tunnel.
Yeah,
I totally got him.
Yeah.
Now we live, you know, we live kind of on the outskirts of the city. We have some green belts near us mm-hmm. in the neighborhood
I've been
next
to your neighborhood.
Ours.
Yeah.
Well, those green belts are
creepy.
Well, and they're kind of habitats for a coyote pack
mm-hmm.
in our neighborhood. And I've got a couple of friends who have lost pets to this particular pack of coyotes.
Yeah.
And he told me, so I mean, this thing's just watching my dog over the fence. I mean, it was in a place where it could, because there's a point outside of our yard that kind of, you can look down into our yard.
Very creepy.
And so when we let our dog out to do the business at night and whatnot, I don't let her go out and just wait for her to come back in. I'll go out there with her.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Especially this time of year, because they've just had their little broods, whatever they call a pack of baby coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, they're stalking. A friend of mine told me that a coyote lured his dog. This one coyote kind of came out, and this dog started barking at him again, and the dog started to go after him. And the dog chased the coyote into the woods.
Yeah, they do that. They feign injury.
And there's a pack waiting in the woods.
Yeah, so what they do is, if you ever see a coyote kind of skipping, looking like it's got a hurt back leg, they feign injury to try to get dogs to chase them, thinking that they're easy play friends
easy mark. And then the pack.
Yeah, that's what they do. They're very devious little creatures. So when I was living in Santa Cruz about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, And my little Pomeranian bear, little teeny tiny little Pomeranian, tops 15 pounds. I mean, he's not a very big dog whatsoever.
Right.
Big in spirit, very small in size.
In self-defense.
And so, you know, he had to go on long walks because they're Spitz dogs. So they have a lot of that cardio.
Okay.
So we're talking 45 minutes to an hour twice a day, every day.
Nice.
Right? He needed
it. You're a good owner, man.
And so it's, I would say it's June in Santa Cruz, and Sarah and I are walking little Boo Bear around, and he's having the time of his life. And all of a sudden I hear this like chittering down in the, just beyond the street light. I hear this weird, I can't even replicate it, but this kind of chittering, like, you know, almost hyena-esque in nature, if that makes sense. And then me being a simpleton, I go, I think there's birds over there. And I turn to Sarah, and she's already got Bear in the football position up on her arms. And she says, we have to go. And I said, why? And then I look back at the streetlight, and I see about six coyotes, which are just kind of hanging out, being like, man, that's a delicious looking
Pomeranian.
Nice little Pomeranian you got there. So here's the crazy thing. We start walking away, and I'm thinking, these coyotes are clearly not interested in fighting two people for a Pomeranian, right? This isn't going to be the thing. But much like the hyenas in the Lion King, they continue to stalk us for several blocks.
No kidding.
Continuing this bizarre chittering noise, which I later would find out in reading about it, they do so to try to attract the animal by making it sound like they are a smaller creature. So that animal runs up to the undercover of darkness, thinking that they're going to get a prey creature, but in actuality,
little bunny or something,
but in actuality, isn't that so devious? And Boo Bear was totally oblivious. He's just,
having time.
Hey, I'm getting carried now, you guys. Are we going home or what? Let's go party, bro. And he didn't know that he was about 30 yards away from just horrific death.
Well, it was a nice article in the Times about what to do if you have a coyote or a cougar or a bear in your backyard, or
you,
if you're
paint
on
a
trail,
road that goes in a U shape so that they run directly into a wall.
Well, coyotes like the least intrusive of these critters that they describe in the article. You're supposed to make noise, yell, clap your hands, shake some, bang something metal if you have it,
right?
A trash can lid, something like that. They say don't ever run from a coyote. Or from a cougar. Remember the lady got attacked by a bike from a cougar? It's very rare that cougars attack people.
Yeah.
But if you see a cougar, their instinct is to chase. So if you see a cougar, don't turn your back, don't run. Try to get big and yell, make noise. Give them an escape route, a path out of the way.
This is great information. Andrew, A+, my friend. Great job today, sir. Nate Connors, dang.
I'm back, baby.
I'm just looking at your masculine outline against the backdrop of those drapes behind you. Mm-hmm. Is that a Cairo Radio fitted zip?
Yes, it is. Every Tuesday.
Dang, Nate Connors, back at it again with the fashion tips.
Thank you.
Laura, A+. Spike, give me a solid C+ today.
Thanks, brother.
Solid C+, my dude. Here's your quote. It's your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
The stone I gave her mother when we became engaged.
You told me that the hardest part of that was having to pop open grandma's coffin.
Well, Dee tried digging in the dark and quiet. And I'm like, can we get a backhoe? And Melissa's like, no, they'll hear it. Keep digging.